Yes. I'd like to convene the finance committee. We do have a quorum present. We do have the minutes from March 31st in the folder. Representative Wagenius, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Be honest? No.
Yes.
Okay, you don't want to make the motion then. Representative Griley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move them. I haven't read them either, but I'm confident that,
our
staff is good.
Okay, very good. Motion is before us to approve the minutes for March 31st. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. First bill up will be House File 1221 by Representative Bunn. And that came from the Transportation Committee. Representative Champion.
Yes.
You're at that right down there. You're usually over here.
I know. I moved. I'll turn the trick on you this morning. I move the Transportation Policy and Finance Division report for House File Numbers 1221, the first committee engrossment.
Okay. Motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Champion.
I move House File Number 1221, the first committee engrossment, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register.
Okay, that motion is before us, and Representative Bunn, if you could explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like also to ask that you move the A1 amendment as well to put it in its final form for today, or the form I'd like to have it in.
The motion, by the way, Representative Solberg indicates it should go to Ways and Means. So we'll incorporate that into the Champion motion. Is that correct, Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chairman, whenever you establish a special revenue account, even though there's no appropriation, it still should be part of the Ways and Means.
Okay. So that will be incorporated into the Champion motion. Representative Bunn?
So, Mr. Chair, I was asking if we could move the A1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Champion.
I move the amendment. A1 amendment.
Okay, the motion is before us. Representative Bunn on the amendment.
Yes. Mr. Chair, it's just been suggested by fiscal staff in conjunction with talking to the Department of Finance that this is a unique and special kind of account that's being set up in the bill currently on page 1, line 7. It was called a special revenue account fund, but we want to change the word special revenue to gift. That's on the advice of the agency involved.
Okay, any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, Representative Bunn on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All of you present, I'm sure, are aware of and familiar with the historic Stillwater Lift Bridge. Like me, I imagine that you have walked near it or driven across it many times in your lives. It's a treasure in our community in the East Metro, but also to the entire state. I'm sure you're also aware there's been a long-running discussion about the building of a new Stillwater Bridge crossing. Due to the passage of House File 2800 last year in Chapter 152, the funding for a new Stillwater Bridge crossing has been greatly advanced. It had been planned to commence construction in 2024. That's now as a result of many of yours in this room's efforts and passage of the Comprehensive Transportation Finance Bill has been moved up to the year 2013, 11 years earlier. I must thank you personally for that and on behalf of many members of my community who are very supportive of this project going forward. As part of this larger project to have a new Stillwater Bridge crossing or St. Croix River Bridge crossing, throughout the last several years, based on previous legislation and funding mitigation monies, mostly federal, planning for bridge crossing has continued and progressed over this period, as well as agreements struck on mitigation projects, as well as multiple mitigation projects being actually underway. As part of this larger effort of the related to the memorandum of agreement around the larger St. Croix River crossing project, a Stillwater Lift Bridge Advisory Committee was formed and a mitigation project was conducted to address what would happen to the old Stillwater Lift Bridge when the new crossing is completed. The agreement that was reached was that this historic lift bridge would be converted to a pedestrian and biking bridge for the future that would be connected to a larger, I believe, 6-mile loop trail system that would cross the St. Croix River at 2 spots and be a tremendous asset to the citizens of our state and also the state of Wisconsin in terms of recreational opportunities. What you have before you here today is a small bill, but that's a necessary step to ensure the larger St. Croix River crossing project is a requirement of the memorandum of agreement, is that we create an endowment fund to allow federal monies, potentially state monies in the future, but also private monies from individuals, from groups, to place funds in this endowment fund. And then these monies would be used for the basic operation and maintenance of the lift bridge after the new Stillwater St. Croix River bridge crossing has been completed, to fund the ongoing basic operation and maintenance, not big projects related to it, but just the standard yearly operation maintenance, including maintaining the lift function of the bridge. So a amount of money for the future is, they have a goal of how much money to create in this endowment eventually with federal and other monies coming in. And then this will be funded, the stream from the endowment would be used for this basic operations and maintenance. So that is what this bill does. And it's unique. It's never been a fund like this. It's never been created before. And so that's why the discussion about whether it be special revenue or gift, because it's also going to receive gifts from organizations and individuals, it was determined that the gift fund designation would be more appropriate. There's also some language about in the legislation about income from the account, how it will be handled, and also legislation about whether or not, language about whether there's a situation in the future or at some time, if for any reason the bridge might actually need to be closed and taken down, who would be consulting that process and how that would proceed and what would happen to the fund at that time. So, in fact, in the last committee we ran, we added some additional language in on 2.10 and 2.111 to make sure if that ever came to pass that the commissioner would do so in consultation with the State Historic Preservation Office. Historic Preservation Office, as well as many local groups and others, have all participated in this lift bridge advisory group that's had public meetings over the last many months to engage in this conversation. So that's the essence of what's before you today. I have with me also representatives from MnDOT, also from the Historic Preservation Office, also from the Historical Society. A number of people here if you have any further detailed questions.
Okay, thank you. I'm told that there are a couple of changes that we need to make. We'll take care of those now. On page 1, line 1.17, we would need to strike the word fund and put in the word account. Everybody see that? Staff picked that up. Mr. March did, I think. And on the second page, 2.14, again, we need to strike the word fund and insert the word account. Chair makes that motion. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Tolbert.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bunn, on 2.1 to 2.3, there's an appropriation that's made. And that appropriation is appropriated annually to the Commissioner of Transportation for the purposes. That means that the legislature never, ever, 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 ever sees what's done with the money. It's done by the commissioner, period. And I always have some difficulty of open and standing appropriation. I don't have any language for you now, but when it comes to ways and means, I would hope that we would have that changed from an annual appropriation without the legislature ever seeing it to a statutory appropriation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fulbert, thank you for that comment, and I welcome our discussions to come together around that committee.
Representative House.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fulbert kind of went in the same direction I went, but what I'm confused with is subdivision 6, if there's demolition, The last sentence after the comma is appropriated to Commissioner of Transportation only for that purpose. And that's the principle. What happens if there's money left and it's only used for that purpose and the bridge is demolished? We no longer have a bridge to take care of or demolish. Where does the money go?
Representative Bunn, or maybe that would be a question for the combat.
Mr. Chair, we'll ask, see if they have an answer to that, but if Mr. Chair isn't yes one, we'll work on that one as well. Go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Todd Parkowski. I work for MnDOT, and I'm an East Area Engineer for MnDOT. In response to Representative's question, we don't have a direct answer to that question just yet. We could continue to work with the groups to define if there is a remaining balance following a potential demolition and removal of lift bridge. We could continue to work on adding verbiage in on that.
What I'm tempted to do is when we have bills leave the Finance Committee, we want them in good order. Rather than continuing to work on the bill, I think we'll lay it over. But we will, in the meantime, take there are some other questions in case there's some other issues that are uncovered, and then we'll reschedule a bill and take care of the amendments. Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bunn, is there already some account somewhere where people have collected private donations, contributions to preserve the bridge?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, not to my knowledge at this time, I'll ask the department.
Representative and Chair, not to my knowledge either.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bunn, and that's how would you advertise this? Is that your intent to try and build the account with local private donations or contributions from any sort?
Representative Bunn.
Mr. Chair, Representative Emmer, as I mentioned, there's a Stillwater Lift Bridge Advisory Commission that has been meeting regularly this past year. My understanding, but we'll get it confirmed in a moment, is that that's an ongoing group. It has long-time members of the community. It has local officials attend the meetings. It has historic society, historical preservation people that attend the meetings. So I had assumed that this group, as well as MnDOT, would be working together on the plan to do that kind of outreach in the future, but we'll ask them to address it as well.
Chair and Representative, there is continuing ongoing stakeholder involvement in the development of the St. Clair River Crossing project, so there will be that continued consultation process going on.
Well, and then lastly, Mr. Chair, the reason I'm asking is because it seems to me if you're going to go out and ask people to contribute money to preserve the bridge, and then ultimately you've got a clause in here that says their money can be used to demolish the bridge, don't you see that as maybe being a problem at some point? And are you going to disclose to people that even though your intent is to preserve this, your contribution could ultimately be used to demolish the bridge? That doesn't seem to be consistent. Looks like a potential problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this may be a question for staff, Mr. Chair, but I find the verbiage here a little interesting that we're going to send money to a gift account and yet that money can come from a state appropriation or federal funds. So to staff, is there any precedents where we as a state appropriate money to a gift account that you're aware of?
He was asking staff. Were you asking committee staff or DOT? Okay.
I wasn't sure if you're talking about our committee staff.
Okay.
Mr. Mark.
Mr. Chair and Representative Diskins, the gift fund is one of many funds in the state's funds. The reason for moving it to the gift fund from the special revenue fund, first of all, was the special revenue fund has no endowment type accounts in it. An endowment account would have a portion of the money that's not spent and a portion that is, and so it requires a bit different kind of accounting. There are a variety of accounts in the gift fund, and they range, they're largely ones where individuals have given gifts to the state for certain purposes. There's a Veterans Affairs one, there's one for scientific and natural areas and so on, but in some sense, it's just another account, and it wouldn't matter whether the money came from the state or came from other purposes. but it, the gift fund is just a more appropriate placement for something that has endowments involved with it. So.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Final question to Mr. March, because I don't think I got my answer. The question is there, would this be unprecedented, or is there precedence for appropriating state dollars, the legislative appropriation of state dollars to a gift account?
Mr. Chair, Representative Diskins, I don't know. I'd have to check if there are any accounts in the gift fund that have had state appropriations, and I'll get back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smalley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bond, I had a question as far as an endowment fund. Art Rolnick has always proposed an early childhood endowment fund, but the main worry was always that in times of trouble, in times of economic difficulties such as now, the legislature would raid the fund. Mm-hmm. Do you have safeguards, Representative Bond, for this fund so that that would not happen?
Representative Bond.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smalley, I think that's an excellent question. My guess is we probably do not, and that's a great concern. I will certainly ask that further, but when I asked my finance and ways and means chairs early in the session to what extent we could do that on any of our special funds, the answer was if it's not in the Constitution. I believe the answer I received, if it's not in the Constitution, you know, it's available, protecting it. So I think that's a serious concern, and again, as well as the comment made by Representative Emmer in terms of the final use of these funds possibly for demolition under very special circumstances that might arise, that the public, whoever contributes this fund, should be fully aware of what's involved, and that would be one of the issues I would think as well.
We're going to lay this bill over then, and I think you've got two, maybe three issues that have surfaced, and our goal is going to be not to send bills out that still are being worked on. We want to get them in the best possible form when they leave the committee. So if you can work with those folks that express some concern or interest in staff, then we'll reschedule the bill either here or maybe even in the transportation division. I'm not sure yet, but at any rate, we'll continue the work on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The committee process worked as it should, and I have several good points that we need to pursue. Thank you.
Okay. And we'll now go to House File 863 by Representative Hilty. And Representative Hilty, if you'd like to move the division report.
I would, Mr. Chair. I move the Energy Policy and Finance Division report for House File 863, the first committee in Grossman.
The motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. Representative Hilty?
Mr. Chair and members, House File 863 is the energy.
You'll need to. Are you going to move the bill?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Got ahead of myself. Mr. Chair, I move that House File 863, the first committee in Grossman, be recommended to pass and be referred to Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay, the motion is before us, and Representative Hilty, there are a couple of amendments here, one by the author. I think you told me it was a housekeeping amendment. If you want to move the amendment before you explain the bill, or explain the bill and then move the amendment.
Actually, Mr. Chair, I think it would be just as well to explain the bill first.
Okay, and then we'll take both your amendment and Representative Keith Nansen amendment then when you're done explaining the bill.
So
we have a scheduling issue. Representative Keeson would like to move the amendment that he has before 11 o'clock. Representative Keeson?
It would be fine to take the amendment now, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to move the 834 amendment, if I could.
The motion is before us.
And this amendment deals with a section in the bill on thermal energy, which is a section of our energy economy that we don't do much with. And this basically says that we're going to that any biomass that's used for thermal energy under the provisions of this section, which is to reduce greenhouse gases, would be done consistent with sustainable forest management principles, which we are actually already have a policy in state law about that. And so it just be to make sure that we're doing that consistent with other provisions of statute.
Okay, the motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. And Representative Hilty, you're going to wait on your amendment then?
Well, Mr. Chair, we might as well.
You might as well take it now. Okay.
Take it now. It really is just a clarifying amendment. That would be the A29 amendment. That would move its adoption.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House Bill 863 is the Energy Policy and Finance Division Omnibus Policy Bill. Contains provisions from a number of members. And the Chair has asked that we run through it briefly to give members an idea of what it does contain. I have with me at the table Mr. Elas from House Research, who will walk us through the bill section by section.
Just a very brief overview, if you would, Mr. Elas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first section merely specifies that hydroelectric facilities are eligible for renewable energy payment incentives that we've been paying to wind projects for a long time. Section 2 indicates that $5 million annually be allocated to the University of Minnesota's Initiative for Renewable Energy and Environment for the activities listed herein. Section 3 increases the ceiling on appraisal fees awarded under an eminent domain procedure with respect to a public service corporation, which includes utilities. It raises it from $500 to $1,500. Section 4 requires the Public Utilities Commission, in reviewing a utilities incentive plan, to provide an incentive that makes implementation of cost-effective conservation the most profitable resource choice for a public utility. Section 5 creates a University Avenue light rail utility zone and specifies what kinds of costs can be recaptured by utilities that relocate facilities there and add other innovative energy facilities. Section 6 requires the Public Utilities Commission to initiate a proceeding to create a standardized contract provision for what are called community-based energy development projects, which are usually small wind projects. Section 7 on page 6 requires electric utilities to purchase or contract in the aggregate 200 megawatts of small wind projects below 5 megawatts each between now and December 2010. Section 8 allows research of energy storage devices to the cost that utilities may recover. Section 9 makes voluntary a project called green pricing, which allows utility customers to purchase more renewable energy than the utility offers if they so wish and want to pay the additional costs. That program was scheduled to sunset in 2010. This part of the bill allows utilities to continue that on a voluntary basis and specifies the price that customers must pay. Section 10 changes the state's renewable energy standards with respect to Xcel Energy, which in current law, by the year 2020, 30% of their energy must be from renewables. At least 25% must be generated by wind. This amendment allows that 25% to be generated by either wind or solar energy. Section 11 provides authorization for a public utility to essentially issue a refund to its customers if an illegal rate was charged. Section 12, now on page 10, allows a utility to carry forward energy savings above the 1.5% annual energy savings goal for the succeeding three calendar years. Section 13 on page 11 allows the utility to use up to 5% of its conservation improvement spending for projects for homeowners, either solar thermal projects, geothermal projects, or heating units that burn biodiesel, shelled corn, or wood chips.
Section 14 allows a natural gas utility to purchase biomethane and, again, use up to 5% of its conservation improvement funds to do so, and specifies how that may be counted against its annual energy savings goal. Section 15 allows the University of Minnesota's Center for Sustainable Building Research to, in addition to being reimbursed for its administrative and coordinative functions under this bill, to also be reimbursed for substantive programmatic activities. And later in this section, it allows a utility's design assistance program under its SIT program to consider the strategic planting of trees and shrubs around buildings as an energy conservation measure. Section 16 specifies that a utility can offer programs to its customers to install solar energy projects and get a be allowed to do that and exceed the 5% limit on their SIP spending, which currently exists. Section 17 amends the definition of qualifying solar electric project to specifically include storage, energy storage devices. Section 18 directs XL Energy and the public utility essentially to negotiate a price adjustment clause in the contract and requires PUC approval of that clause. Section 19 amends or directs the Public Utilities Commission to issue a report on the present and future inadequacies of the transmission system to the Legislative Energy Commission. Section 20 changes conditions under which a large wind facility is exempt from the state certificate of need process. Essentially, whereas 10% of the capacity was required to be a community-based energy development project, that is no longer a necessity. Section 22 changes the requirements for hiring the reliability administrator in the Department of Commerce. Section 23 directs the Commissioner of Commerce and Pollution Control Agency in preparing a report specify whether the use of solar energy and the combustion of biomass can help the state achieve its greenhouse gas reduction goals. Section 24 just makes some housekeeping changes to the renewable energy production incentive language. Sections 25 through 29 make permanent the temporary authority that counties now have to issue site permits for wind energy conversion systems that are under 25 megawatts in size. Sections 30 through 39 is language that allows two municipal power agencies to essentially work together or create a third municipal power agency. Section 40 on page 28 allows the Mountain Iron Economic Development Authority to form or become a member of a limited liability company in order to develop a large wind project. Section 41 directs that the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul prepare a report specifying strategies that would increase the rate of solar energy adoption in Minnesota to the legislature. Section 42 directs that natural gas utilities can essentially send a report to the Public Utilities Commission and have the commission approve their conservation improvement plan, even if it doesn't match the 1.5% savings goal. Section 43 requires Xcel Energy to transfer the specified amounts as funding for the community, for the search teams, the clean energy resource teams. And Section 44 repeals that sunset I referred to earlier with respect to the green pricing program.
And that's the chair of that the bill.
And we have a question by Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, you know, I know this is termed the Omnibus Energy Policy Bill. However, as I listened to the explanation and read through as we were going along, I see you have fee increases, mandated reports, other mandates on utilities, et cetera, and yet there is no fiscal note to this bill. Mr. Chair, will the financial components necessary to fund this bill be in the Omnibus Energy Finance Bill, or how does this all work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, the main financial elements in the bill are the extension of the funding of IRE with the Renewable Development Fund. And that's actually something that we're already doing, and that's not a general fund issue, and that's true of the CERT issue as well. We do not at this time have a fiscal note for which section is that on? No.
By
section 3. Mr. Chair and Representative Biskin, I don't believe that, well, perhaps Mr. Elif can explain this better than I can, but what this refers to is fees that are awarded, they're appraisal fees that are awarded for appraisals done in eminent domain proceedings. I don't think it has any fiscal impact on government at any level.
Mr. Elias, did you have anything to add on?
That's my understanding, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, am I reading Section 43 wrong to where there looks like about a 1.12 million dollar appropriation in that section, and I know that there was an amendment dealing with where that money would come from, but there's an appropriation that tells the Department of Commerce to actually spend more. Section 23 looks like there's a new mandate on our departments to create proposals with an eye towards a very specific I'm not quite sure what it is, but that typically, those kind of mandates carry costs with it as well.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, this is actually an extension of something that we're already doing. This is the funding for the clean energy resource teams that have been in existence for some time. They were funded in the same manner in the last last biennium, and actually what this section is doing is reducing the funding that they have received in the past by 10%. It's not asking the commissioner or anyone to do anything that they haven't already been doing.
We have Representative Wagenius. Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Please keep looking on page 11.
Representative Wagenius, I'm having trouble hearing you.
Okay. Looking on page 11, line 18, where it says that no, or 19, except no rebate may be awarded to a solar thermal project that heats water. Why are we excluding solar thermal, particularly since it's being produced in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative Virginia, this was a provision offered by Representative Westrom. We did have this discussion in committee, and quite frankly, I thought that we had deleted this line. I don't recall if there was some reason that didn't happen. Well, apparently that just didn't happen, but that was actually our intention in committee. If you want to move to delete line 19,
if you could,
that would be fine.
The reference point again for everyone and Representative Wagenius.
Okay, and we're looking at page 11, line 19. There is a reference that says no rebate may be awarded for solar thermal projects that heat water. And I think if we just, from the comma on, deleted the rest of that sentence. So we'd leave the E in, but starting with the word except, and delete the rest of that sentence. Would that work for you, Representative Hilke?
Keep the semicolon.
Hmm?
Keep the semicolon.
Keep the semicolon, yes. Okay. And I would think that'd be okay.
Okay, so you go through the word water up to the semicolon.
Clear, we'll deal with the punctuation.
Okay, so line 11, 19.
After the comma.
After the comma, so you'd include the comma, and then you'd go through the word water and include the, or leave the semicolon. Representative Wagenius moves the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius, did you have anything else? Okay, then we have Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilde, I'm interested in the Section 5 on the Utility Avenue Light Rail Corridor Transit Zone. Is there anything in that section that either disallows or discourages undergrounding of the line? Could that be used to underground the line?
Mr. Representative Kahn, not that I'm aware of. I think this section is silent on that issue.
Representative Kahn.
Okay, and is there anything in, is there anything I know nothing about? It's utility law. So is there anything existing anywhere else that would discourage undergrounding?
Mr. Chair, I think I'd just ask Mr. Eliff to enlighten us on that.
Mr. Elia.
Maybe I can get a clarification. The undergrounding of the
utility line.
Of the utility line?
Yes.
Well, Representative Silky said, or this is kind of silent, I believe that is usually something that the cities in question pay for.
Okay.
Representative
Kahn. One case that I was involved in with the undergrounding utilities lines is, you know, the usual way of paying for it is by a surcharge on the rate on the people being served. And so in this particular area, it was argued that the people being served were very, very small numbers, but that the advantage actually went further through the service district. And so that, you know, there are many people who would like to talk about the undergrounding of lines for various projects, and, you know, obviously not in this bill, but at some point we ought to look at that and look at how the rates should be adjusted to pay for undergrounding.
Okay, Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's to the same point that Representative Kahn brought up, because perhaps I don't understand it, but just reading the language, my question is, are you taking authority away from the local authority? What's going to happen with local permitting authority, public hearings, input on design, all of that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Emmer, all that's going to stay the same. The only thing this section pertains to is how costs will be recovered by the utility and which costs they are and what conditions are necessary in order for those costs to be recovered.
We have Representative Clark.
Thank you, Senator. Trying to catch up with this. This doesn't, David, I just wanted to make sure this doesn't spell out that it must be paid by this local government.
I'm sorry.
Representative Clark, we can't hear you.
Sorry. I just want to make sure that your response was that the undergrounding is usually paid for by local government, but this doesn't require that, does it? Or present a different arrangement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, no, this legislation does not.
Thank you.
We have Representative Fulbert.
The motion is to send it to Ways and Means. Is that correct? Okay.
Yes. Representative Pepper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Healthy, I have several questions with the bill, but I think I'll just limit it to a couple since I know we've got a lot of members in the committee. I'm wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about Section 18, where it says that we're going to amend the power purchase agreement described in paragraph B. And I'm wondering if you can talk to me about that. I'm assuming that's the biomass plant in northern Minnesota. I'm wondering what the need is. Why are we having to go back and renegotiate a deal? Is there some problem up there? Is there we're not able to generate enough biomass, or what exactly is going on there?
Representative
Hildy. Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, my understanding is that commonly agreements such as this do have an adjustment clause that allows the terms of the agreement to be revisited. In this case, that did not happen, and the reason that it needs to happen is that circumstances have changed materially since this contract was entered into, specifically with the cost of transportation fuels and the cost of the biomass that they're using in the plant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty. So, is the plant up there? Is it, in your opinion, is it successful? Has it been biomass or has coal had to be trucked in, or have there been problems?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I think it's been a very successful operation. It started out to be an exclusively coal burning plant. They have been augmenting that with biomass at a continuing rate, so that, as it has been explained to me, they went from a situation in which it had coal here and biomass here to basically the other way around at this point. Which is one reason that the cost of the biomass has been a greater consideration.
I just have one follow-up on that.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty. Is this with Xcel then? Is this who has to do the renegotiating? Did they testify in favor or against this provision?
Actually, Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, the testimony from Xcel was that of the options available to dealing with the situation, this was the best one.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No. And Representative Hilty, there's a couple references in here. You and I had talked recently about some potential for hydro storage in the old natural ore pits on the range, and I noticed that in Section 1 dealing with hydroelectric facilities, and then in Section 2 when you're giving money to IRE, Energy Storage Technologies. Would that be included in that type of process, be included in both of those references, hydroelectric and energy storage technology?
Representative
Hildy. Mr. Eloff, can you give us an interpretation of that?
Mr. Eloff. Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative Rukavina, I wasn't privy to those conversations, so I'm not exactly sure what you're talking of. I can say in Section 2, the IRE, energy storage technologies is one of the activities that we're giving them money to do further research on. The renewable energy payment incentive under Section 1 is just for the hydroelectric power. It does not include, it depends on output. It doesn't refer to storage devices that might be there.
Well, my question, Mr. Chair, is would a hydro storage where you pump water up deeply at night and then make electricity during the day, is that hydroelectric power? Can you give me an interpretation that it would be interpreted as hydroelectric?
Well, the Department of Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, the Department of Commerce would have to make that interpretation in order for a project like that to receive its payments, and I noticed a representative from the Department of Commerce making his way towards the witness stand.
Somebody that you're coming forward, you heard the question, but if you could identify yourself then for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeremy DeFebri, and I'm with the Office of Energy Security in the Department of Commerce. And yes, I did hear the question. I don't have the underlying statute in front of me, but memory tells me that in order to qualify for the incentive payment, a facility has to be at the site of an existing dam, a dam that was in existence as of 1994.
Damn, Mr. Chair. with that, I assume that was your concluding comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hilty, I know we look at fiscal costs for a variety of entities here, implementation and so on, but the fiscal cost I'm looking for is the ratepayers, the regular people out there paying their electric bills, their gas bills, and other things like that. You have a fiscal note or something that will say what will this do to regular folks out there right now who are having a hard time, and what's this going to do to their bills that they pay on a regular basis? What's this going to do to them?
That's
unhealthy. Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't think there's anything in here that would change rates in any way.
Representative Bryant.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was...
Or Representative Kiffmeyer, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I find that really quite amazing that we're doing all of this, and you're expecting that none of these folks are doing any of this work are going to pass along any more costs to the ratepayers out there and their bills or anything. I mean, that's usually what happens. I see a lot of work here. Usually this is passed on to the ratepayer. You're saying there's going to be no extra costs that are going to go out to the ratepayers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, that is what I'm saying. If you could point to something in particular in the bill that you think would have that implication, I would try to address that specifically.
Well, yes.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Section 5. Mr. Chairman, I believe those members who were in a previous committee, Section 7, Section 35, Section 7 says electric utilities, as defined, must purchase or contract to purchase energy from a sufficient number of renewable energy projects, capacity 5 megawatts or less. It doesn't say at the lowest cost, but, you know, there's other things like that. There's another $35 million in Section 35. Those are just two for right now.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, in Section 7, there is no reference to cost because these projects would be negotiated for price the same way every other project is. It would just be a means of the utilities involved moving forward and meeting their requirements under the renewable energy standards. The only thing about it is that it specifies smaller projects, but they would have to be price competitive with any other project in order for the project to go forward. And I might add that the reason that we expect that they would be is that there is a window of opportunity with the use of the federal stimulus funds to finance, or basically get a rebate of 30% of the cost of the project if it's in place by December 31st, 2010. And it was our assumption that projects of this size would be capable of meeting that requirement, whereas larger projects most likely would not, since they would, among other things, have the constraints of getting into the MISO queue.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative, thank you, Representative Hilty. If that's the case, then maybe an appropriate amendment in Section 7 might be, instead of having must, just change those words to may, so that indeed we do protect the ratepayers and protect their ability as to be flexible here.
Representative Hilty.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would oppose that amendment. We had this was very thoroughly discussed in the committee, and I don't believe that the intention here would be served by changing this to a basically voluntary program.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let's also take a look at considering that you think that these companies then would be unwilling to conserve energy when it makes it feasible. I'm just concerned about the ratepayers in this particular section, because when you're saying they must, it kind of weakens your whole ability to negotiate if you have a state law that says you must. Makes it so difficult to get the best price when your other side of the negotiating table knows that you have no option, you must. So I think if we indeed are concerned about the ratepayers, I think this is just one area that we could do that.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I can only say that this was extensively discussed. We've had discussions about this with utilities. It's an extremely small, I mean, we're talking about 200 megawatts of power in a system that consists of roughly 16,000 megawatts in the state of Minnesota. This is an extremely small requirement that I think even the smallest of the distributors or providers in the state would have very little difficulty meeting. And as I said, since there's no requirement that there be any kind of price consideration in this, I don't think that it's a difficult requirement, and I don't think that it would result in any increase in anybody's rate.
Well, Mr. Chairman, then let's move to Section 5. I believe they're referring again to that committee. I think there was about $30 million that was discussed to excel ratepayers. And again, this was just some testimony and some of the costs that were reported to me that, you know, just raised my concern in regards to our ratepayers. And I think it's something that we ought to be very concerned about. Is this is a big bill, and I'm just seeing a variety of sections. And isn't that maybe just one adds up to a big price tag? But it's all of them being put together, a little bit here, there, and everywhere. And there's only so much that regular people can really take out there of just constantly increasing just a buck here, a few bucks there. Next thing you know, you're putting them on the edge of meeting now our welfare.
Representative Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I would call your attention to line 4.25, beginning of that sentence. The commission may approve anything that's proposed here would clearly be subject to the approval of the Public Utilities Commission, and I believe that the Public Utilities Commission in the state has a pretty good record of protecting ratepayers. I don't think that it's very likely that they would approve something that could not be justified in those terms.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, I'm glad you have such faith and confidence in the commission, and looking forward to them not raising rates, and maybe we'll revisit this subject again in the future at taking a look at this, and if we have such confidence in them, then maybe we may revisit this again. But I think for the point now, I just want to make sure that when we're talking about a variety of other things, that we include our regular citizens out there who got to make payments and all these things, and that they are here at the table too, and that we have a concern for them. And I don't think it's just so easy to just throw it off to them, and that all of these changes are just not going to have to be paid for by somebody somewhere. And I think that's an important consideration, but I'll leave it go for now, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Rodney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just as a follow-up, I think the fact that we have a green pricing program extension in the bill indicates that there are costs, additional costs to consumers through these wind and solar and alternative energy projects. And so to suggest that there's no cost increases is a little interesting. But my questions, Mr. Chairman, are specific to Sections 21 and 23, I think. Section 23, Representative Kelsey, I'm trying to understand why we would want findings or a recognition of specific energy sources put in the language. It seems to me that the language would be just fine on line 21.19 to start with the words, the annual legislative proposal. Why are the lines 21 through 15 through 21.19 necessary to this language?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Brett, I had difficulty finding this. The lines you were referring to. Could you please repeat the question?
Yep, it's Section 23, Representative Hilty, lines 21.15 through 21.19, and it just says that the legislature recognizes, and then it goes through a whole litany of things that we're supposed to be recognizing. I'm just wondering why those findings are necessary. We, on a bipartisan basis, have tried to remove findings from various legislation, and while this doesn't say findings, it is findings.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, this was the subject of some discussion. This is an amendment to the bill as it was originally proposed. There was concern on the part of a number of people that as this was originally proposed, it was over vague and broad, so that people felt that it might imply things beyond what was intended here, such as the burning of municipal waste. And we put this statement in to clarify that there was no intention of the burning of municipal solid waste or refuse derived fuel.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, I appreciate that. I think we can do that through starting with lines 21.19 without those findings. But I hope that as we move to the floor, you'd be open to a friendly amendment. But also, if we're going to talk about what we need to meet our future energy needs and our greenhouse gas reduction goals, I hope that you'll view an amendment related to nuclear power as a friendly amendment as we go forward on that legislation. But my other question, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, relates to Section 21. I'm wondering why we're removing the requirement to consider reliability and impact on ratepayers out of the things that we're considering as projects are moved forward. In the language before, it said that must consider those things, and now it's just saying they're there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, this represents House File 1155, which was a bill brought forward by Representative Magnus, and I believe that he was doing that on behalf of the department and the Public Utilities Commission. Perhaps Mr. Elis could give us some further explanation of the reasoning here.
Mr. Elis.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, you're referring to the changes on page 20?
20.9.
Right. Yes, what the changes that are made in this language essentially takes, I think, a number of conditions which were required to be looked at by the Commission in making its determination, and makes them voluntary.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hilty, I guess I have some concerns over that, recognizing through the Green Pricing Program that there are additional costs to that type of energy. To not have the impact on ratepayers is something that should be or must be considered as a concern of mine. I won't have the amendment today, but I will have an amendment down the road unless that changes between here and the floor. That does require the impact on ratepayers to be fully considered. I think that move is a move in the wrong direction, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, I would suggest that you begin with a conversation with Representative Magnus and see what he can, what you can work out with him. It's his provision.
Mm-hmm.
So we have four people, and I think in the interest of time, we'll be voting Representative Hackbarth, Biskins, Emmer, and Pepin. So Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I was just, when Representative Kiffmeyer was speaking to the issue of increased rates, Representative Hilty, I think maybe you might have misspoke, because we did talk about this extensively in the committee about increased rates to taxpayers, like especially or to ratepayers, especially the XL customers and the things that are going to be required of XL to do and the costs that they're going to have to recover. For example, in I think it was Section 5, we talked about a possibility of up to maybe $38 million extra that that XL is going to have to pay for to do some of these things that within this half mile east side of University Avenue. An additional $38 million to move utilities and upgrade and those kinds of things over and above just the cost of making the changes for the mass transit that are going to have to take place. Now, I did have an amendment in committee that was going to change that, and that was rejected. But I do want to point out the fact that that is going to cost an additional, and we had testimony, an additional $38 million to do through some of these additional upgrades, and that's what we heard in committee. So, and we did also talk about, I can't remember what it was. Now, the other issue that was brought up about the 5 megawatts, exactly, for the extra 200. That's going to be very, very expensive, and that electricity for us, for XL or whoever has to buy that energy, is going to be pay a premium rate for that, and we're going to make a number of people millionaires just by buying that electricity. So to say that this bill isn't going to cost ratepayers increased costs, I think is not quite right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, there isn't anything in that 5 megawatt proposal that changes any of the current circumstances. That's just a way in which utilities can continue to meet their obligations under the renewable energy standard that's already in place. It's not being any more or less expensive than anything else that goes to meet that requirement.
Representative Biskin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, with that, if it's all in law, then why are we taking out on page 8, subpart D, you're removing some of the, I'll call it language that gives, it's comfort language, I think, for, and it's not, I don't know if it's directly related to what you were just addressed with Representative Hackbarth, but I think it is in some ways, because this, especially that last sentence that said if a utility can't meet some of these standards, they have to file a report, but you're removing that language, so you're going to force the issue, which if they're not ready for it, it would seem to me it'll have the exact result that Representative Hackbarth is talking about. And aren't we putting them at risk by taking the language out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Emery, there is a kind of background on this, which I would ask Mr. Ruoff to address.
Mr. Chair and Representative Emery, the original language for the Green Pricing Program, I believe, was enacted in 2001 when there simply... renewable energy was a much lower level of development, and there weren't as many projects available as there are now. We heard testimony by Shell in Energy Committee that they just put out an RFP for projects to help them meet their RES, and the response was 2,200 megawatts worth of renewable projects. But I don't think there's a shortage of renewable projects out there as there might have been 10 years ago.
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
Well, again, it's like all the answers I'm hearing from you folks this morning. Apparently, everything's out there and it's all wonderful, but yet we're enacting a bill that's got all kinds of must, shall do, will. If it's so great out there, I mean, if there's all these resources already there, why are we taking such a heavy-handed, hammer-like approach? Why don't we just let them
continue to do what's best for not only their business, but for the ratepayers in terms of cost. Why don't we just allow it to continue to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hammer, with respect to Section 9, what we're doing is removing something that was the requirement and just making it optional going forward. We're telling utilities that if they wish to continue the green pricing program, they can. It used to be a requirement that they must. And we're saying, no, you don't really have to do that anymore because there's plenty of energy available. And if you want to continue to do that, because there does seem to be a demand on the part of the public for green pricing options, you may continue to offer that option.
Right. And Mr. Chair, Representative Elson, thank you for going back to Section 9. I was asking, I extended it to the whole bill based on the answer that I got from Mr. Eloff. I appreciate you going back to the language and re-explaining what I now understand based on the answer I received. But I'm talking about everything else that's in the bill. And I guess the answer is it's been, as far as the author is concerned, it's been properly vetted in all these other committees. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how it does in the next one.
We have Representative Pepin, Ms. Panouk, and then we're going to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hopi. There's been a lot of talk about the cost and the potential cost to taxpayers. And my recollection, too, is that in the Energy Committee, Xcel testified that there was $38 million in new spending. And so if they're not going to pass it on to the ratepayer, I guess my question would be, are they going to absorb the cost out of the goodness of their hearts? I'm wondering if we can perhaps even have someone from Xcel to testify as to what their plans would be if this bill were passed. I know that we don't usually do that, but I think there's enough confusion over this issue that we should really clarify what their intention would be if this bill were to pass.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I presume you're referring to
Section 5.
Section 5, and this is not mandating that Xcel Energy do this. Anything that they propose, and the reason that they are proposing this, actually what they're attempting to do here is something similar to what they have done that has received national recognition in Boulder, Colorado, in one of their service territories, in trying to implement a smart grid. This is quite forward-looking. They're anticipating the changes that inevitably are coming with regard to how we generate and distribute electricity. So this gives them the opportunity to work out a proposal that would be subject to approval by the Public Utilities Commission. But I think to say that we don't want anybody to try anything new if it's going to have any expense involved, and we presume that business as usual can continue for the next several decades, I think is just wrong. I think that I'm really very appreciative that Xcel came forward with this proposal, and I think that it would be a major mistake to say, no, we're not interested in anything new, anything that pushes the envelope on how we provide these services.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty. Well, I understand that they don't have to, but if this were to pass and they did do it, which they would be allowed to do by law, my recollection was it would be up to $38 million in new spending, and so I'm just trying to understand that comment then and where that money would come from. And I understand what you're saying about there not necessarily being any direct immediate spending, but if this bill passes, throughout this bill, there's a lot of places where it would have the huge potential to dramatically raise the ratepayer increases, and I guess I think it's a little disingenuous to say that it's not going to have any effect. That's why I was just wondering if Xcel could kind of clarify as to, and I know they support this, so I'm just confused as to what the intention is.
If it's not
a serious intent, why is it in the bill at all?
They could just briefly comment, perhaps. Phil, got anybody here that can respond? We generally don't take testimony, but we do provide the opportunity to respond to questions. So I think you heard the question. And if you could identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Pfeiffer. I'm with Xcel Energy. And to the question of Representative Pepin, this project involves the relocation of utilities to accommodate the new transit corridor. Our intent is to also, while we're digging up that corridor, look at some forward-looking technologies that can help us sort of advance Minnesota's energy future, looking at things like some solar installations, some plug-in hybrid vehicle options, things like that, some aggressive energy conservation along the corridor. A lot of this would be covered in the normal relocation process that we follow. And so we think there's a good opportunity to dovetail a transit project with some forward-looking energy technologies that hopefully get us to a point where we can learn enough and end up saving ratepayers down the road when we figure out what's going to work in terms of looking at new technologies.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pfeiffer, so I'm trying to rectify the committee comments earlier with what Representative Hilty is saying. So the $38 million in new spending that was testified in the committee, is that something that you're planning on going forward in this legislation? And if it is $38 million, I know over time it might help the ratepayer, but what would exactly happen in the short term?
Mr. Pfeiffer.
If I'm understanding your question, a portion of that $38 million is the relocation cost for...
My understanding was it was a new spending above that. That's not correct.
There's a portion that is the relocation cost for the facilities we have to provide to accommodate the transit corridor. And then in addition to that, there's some expenditures for forward-looking technologies, correct?
I give up.
We're near the end here, and I indicated that I would recognize a few people. We have reached the end of that. We have a renewal by Representative Hilty that renews his motion that House File 863, the first committee in growth, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried. Representative Hilty, you're up again.
Still here, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move the Energy Policy and Finance Division report for House File 1754, the first committee on growth.
Motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a couple of amendments to the bill.
You'll need to move the bill, Representative Hilty, even though we're going to lay it over. Representative Hilty moves that House File 1754, the first committee in Grossman. Okay, that motion is before us and on the bill, and then you want to take the amendments now?
Mr. Chair, the A1 amendment is the author's amendment. It's actually to a section of the bill that represents Representative Kalin's House File 680, but it's basically a technical amendment, and I would move its adoption.
Okay, the motion is before us. I have it. I think we've got a technical change here. Did you want to explain what the change is?
Mr. Chair and members, on the A1 amendment, line 1.3 is
not necessary, that those words are already in the bill, energy efficient windows. And on page 1, line 23, it should read page 15, line 22. Those are two technical changes.
Okay, so everybody understand 1.23?
1.23.
Oh, 1.23. You changed the 21 to 22, but then you said the line...
Line 1.3 should be deleted from the amendment.
1.3. Oh, excuse me. Okay, I misunderstood. That should be deleted from the amendment. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would incorporate those changes.
Okay, those changes are incorporated into the bill. Into the amendment. Yeah, he incorporated those into the amendment. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also putting forth another friendly oral amendment. It would be on page 9, actually 9.10. I'm asking to delete the word outreach. And then also on line 9.11, I'm asking that we delete the word subdivision 4.
Okay, does everybody have that?
Second one.
That's the motion.
That Champion moves the amendment. Did everybody get the oral amendment? Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Champion, do you want to mention what it deals with?
Yeah. This particular change provides for us to expand, as much as possible here, the notion of inclusion. When we think in terms of what is cited here as 16C.16 subdivision 4, it specifically looks at target purchasing. I believe that when we look at the notion of fostering inclusion, and we really do want to foster inclusion in economically disadvantaged areas with women-owned businesses as well as people of color, I think that it's important to have this language there. I would also note that we are also talking about perhaps also looking at including Minnesota Statute 16C.08, but we're going to reserve that notion so that we can be very clear about whether there's a requirement to have that when we think in terms of federal funds.
Okay, with that, with your motion, you'd be following current law.
Absolutely.
This is what you're accomplishing here. Then, okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed.
No.
Motion carried. Representative Hilty on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. House File 1754 is the division finance bill. It's basically the finance bill that was proposed by the governor and the department. The target that we had for this bill was $5,542,000. The committee bill comes in at $52,369,000, with a remaining $173,000 on the bottom line to general fund. And Mr. Chair, I would point out that the energy finance division is kind of unique in that the accounts that we have in the division are the Department of Commerce and the Public Utilities Commission. And while a great deal of money flows through the activities of both the department and the commission, almost all of their activities result in a collection of fees or assessments, so that in fact the amount of money that is generated by the activities of the Department of Commerce amounts to 125% of the budget. So in the last biennium, I believe that roughly $135 million from the department was returned to the general fund. So when we talk about cutting anything in the activities of the department, what we would end up doing is actually making a cut to the general fund rather than any savings to the general fund, which pretty much explains what we have done here in trying to avoid any kinds of cuts that would actually result in a reduction of revenue. We did follow the governor's recommendations with one exception that I should mention, which is that the governor had recommended with respect to the activity of the department in reviewing proposals for issuance of dual insurance products, that instead of doing the review up front, that the department basically just go ahead and allow the offerings to be made and then review them only if someone had a complaint. That may not be entirely accurate, but it's pretty close. So we thought that was not particularly a good idea. The department, in its analysis of this, had indicated that there was an alternative, which was to simply raise the filing fees for those proposals to cover the cost, and that's what this bill does. Other than that, it does follow the governor's recommendations, and I think that it's a sound bill that I would ask for the committee's approval.
Okay, now this is one that we're dealing with today, and we'll take discussion, and then we lay it over and incorporate it in. We will incorporate it into the report from Representative Wagenius's division. So we have time for just a couple of very quick questions. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may be a question for Representative Gabney, who I see is here. This pertains to the section of the bill that was his standalone bill regarding debt settlement. Just ask the question. He can waive if he wants to answer it. But the question is, I know that we heard this in Representative Gabney's committee, then in Representative Atkins' Commerce Committee, and there was industry buy-in here. I know there were a couple issues that were not yet settled, and we said that there were ongoing negotiations, and I think they particularly pertain to some of the fees or what was or wasn't legal in terms of the fee structure. Can you give us an update on that? Has that been resolved, or is that still ongoing? Because I know that was one of the lingering issues that we were sort of holding on to hear about.
Before Representative Dabney responds, I didn't neglect to mention that in addition to the bill that we started out with, we did incorporate two of Representative Dabney's bills, House File 2029 and House File 549, which he obviously is at the table to address any questions about.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Simon. The debt settlement portion of the bill would be to start regulating a currently unregulated area of debt assistance in the state, and that's debt settlement. We have been working with primarily with one of the two industry groups that exist, and there's, I think, some creative tension between the two groups. I think it's fair to say that we've gotten through most of the policy issues with them. The fee issue does remain outstanding. There was some movement in the Senate that's different now than as it appears in this file. We're looking at that, but there's still some tensions about what the fee structure should be with the goal of assuring that the debt settlement provider has sufficient revenues to do their work, but in a way that protects the consumer, given the very small number of consumers who actually complete a debt settlement plan.
Representative Simon.
And I think, Representative Evan, you summarized exactly where I think you want to be, which is that balance. I think we should be looking out for the consumers but make sure they have that choice. I just want to be careful. I know there was some testimony earlier about unintended consequences, but it sounds like we don't yet know where this is going to land, that maybe negotiations are ongoing. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, that is correct.
Representative Rod.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some creative defensing with with some things on pages 10 and 11. That might be the best word I've ever heard for Representative Gaffney. I'm going to use it quite often now, so thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Pilkey, some concerns I have are related to the stimulus dollars and what they bind us to do or not do. And specifically, I'm wondering about lines 10.14 related to local governments. The lines that say that the Office of Energy Security may require a local government as a condition of receiving a grant to commit to implement future activities, not limited to, et cetera, et cetera. Is that something that's required by the stimulus acceptance, the acceptance of the stimulus dollars, or is that something that isn't required and we can potentially do away with but for those various tenses?
Representative Broad, the section of the bill to which you refer, of course, is Representative Kalin's House File 680 that has been incorporated in us, and since he is the bill as a separate, as a standalone, is on our agenda for sooner or later, appears later now. I'll just ask him to address the questions regarding that part of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Broad, the language you see on 10.14 to 10.17 is actually language proposed by the Department, by the Office of Energy Security, in response to an initial scheme that initial provision that I and others and some advocates had tried to use to leverage the federal funds, which have a limited time frame, and to ask local units of government that are receiving stimulus funds as a cost share to do more energy efficiency work. We had set up a revolving loan fund to continue beyond the two-year life of the stimulus dollars. Some accounting headaches and federal rules have prevented us from doing so. The department felt like this provision, this approach would be a greater way of leveraging funds than just extending them within the 2 years and keep the work ongoing. I will point to the staff training language on 10.16. What that points to is the building operator certification program is one of the most likely pieces where we have facility folks that do a lot of the cleaning and general maintenance of our buildings, our schools and city halls, county government buildings, learning to become better energy managers. And we've seen in a six-week training course leverage into about 20 to 25% reduction in energy bills for those campuses in two cases around the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the intent, but what we're doing is putting an additional mandate on these local governments and doing exactly what the federal government did to us, which is create extending strings out into the future, which I have some concerns about, and probably will make a move to remove that section at some point. My other question, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Hilton, or maybe Representative Kalin, I'm not sure whose bill this is, but Section 4 on page 11, my concern is, and maybe it can be allayed by the Housing Finance Agency, but my concern is that we're going to put dollars focused on energy efficiency when what we ought to be doing is putting dollars focused on getting people into houses, into homes. And so my concern is that we're shifting the priority, and maybe that priority is already there, and I don't know it. I'd be happy to learn about it.
Which of you like?
Mr. Chair, I'll address that initially. Representative Broad, one of the considerations we had about this whole part of this bill, Representative Kalin's bill, and about how to deal with the federal stimulus dollars is that, first of all, there are a number of requirements that come with those dollars. You can't do anything you want with them. And we had extensive discussions about how to maximize, I mean, keeping in mind that these are stimulus dollars, the first thing that we wanted to do is maximize the economic stimulus, creating or retaining jobs and allowing expenditures that would, in fact, amount to an economic stimulus. I think within the parameters that are established by the federal funding requirements. That has been what we have attempted to do, and I think that what we ended up with in this bill is our best shot at doing that.
Just a quick follow-up. So, Representative Schulte, then, it's your opinion that there is no redirection of funds from the Housing Finance Agency from housing individuals to creating energy-efficient housing for individuals.
Representative Galen to address that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Broad, the answer to your question is yes, that this is the allocation of energy stimulus dollars. There are housing dollars as well for stabilization in the housing sector. This program or this section would leverage $12 million with the loan origination program at MHFA, likely quadruple, somewhere in that neighborhood, triple or quadruple that investment, and it is for energy only. And so, in fact, what we're doing is we're doing taking what could be expended as just an energy grant and extending it and doing what you are asking, what you'd like to see, which is stabilizing our housing market, making sure that we reduce the energy bills for those who may be moving into some of the foreclosed homes.
We are actually running a little over, so if members can be real brief. We have several that have indicated they have questions, and I'm told the rest of the bills aren't real controversial. If we can move, we can maybe get through the agenda. Otherwise, we'll have to reconvene at a later time. Representative Broad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'll have to look at their mission, but I didn't know the mission of the Housing Finance Agency was to stabilize the market. It seems to me, and I'll have to go back through my stimulus sheets to find out how it works, but so the federal government chose to create energy-efficient housing over choosing to put those dollars into housing individuals.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rod, no. And neither are we.
Representative Clark.
Chairman, I was just going to say the same thing. Sometimes, you know, a person can't have their housing stabilized unless it is made more energy efficient. It's not worth it if you've got a foreclosed home. That's a mess. So, you know, it's all working together, and I think that's the genius of this particular part of the federal stimulus.
Representative Tappan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this is probably for Representative Kalin, and I've seen that this is probably the third time I've seen this, and I'm probably not any more comfortable with the language in this bill. I think it still needs a lot of work. Just the part I'll talk about, I guess, for today, there's two parts, and one is on page 11, sections 11.22 to 11.31. I just don't understand why we're earmarking. To me, it looks like we're targeting certain groups, which means we're targeting, if you're earmarking certain groups, that means you're boxing other groups out. Why do we have to have the language in there, such as skilled trades, labor unions, tribal colleges, tribal communities, community action partnerships. There's several, you know, words like that. And frankly, some of them are even hard to define, especially targeting communities experiencing disproportionately high rates of unemployment. I'm not sure how that would even be measured, but I guess, to me, this is supposed to be an energy conservation bill. And I don't understand, and maybe you can help me understand why it's a good idea to create these earmarks. Why are we putting these additional mandates on ourselves?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, section or Articles 2 through 6 of House Bill 1754 are actually all dealing with all of the federal stimulus funds, the recovery dollars for energy. And it is a stimulus bill, so it is to put folks back to work who are currently unemployed, and to help retain and stabilize jobs that are at risk. I think that if you read the lines 11.24, 11.25, recruiting individuals, deeds plan for training and workforce development must include procedures to recruit individuals, especially targeting communities experiencing disproportionately high rates of unemployment. I suggest, Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, that's the spirit and the goal of the federal stimulus bill. And lastly, Mr. Chair, just Only on the because of the tax credit, but this bill has not yet obviously been passed and enacted, but just the residential energy efficiency tax credit has resulted in Anderson Windows recalling 180 of the 560 jobs positions that they laid off. We've been working very closely with Anderson Marvin and other window manufacturers in the state, and I won't say that they're going to recall all their positions, but certainly we're seeing that activity ramp up again in our factories, and I think that's the very sign of stimulus and recovery that we need.
Okay, Representative Stephan, was this before the division you were on? If you could be brief, then I assume you have a pretty good knowledge base of previous discussions. Representative Stephan.
Yeah, this is a different question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kalin, I think before when I thought he had very little information about what was actually in the stimulus package, and I still don't know the answer to this question. On page 17, there's a $1.5 million grant, the Board of Trustees of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, for the International Renewable Energy Technologies Institute, Minnesota State University, Mankato. Does that meet the stipulations? Are we allowed to have research and development money spent on projects in the stimulus funding? Have you checked on that to make sure that that's even eligible?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stephan, I'm in conversation with the Office of Energy Security even as recently as this morning about this very provision. I believe that Chair Hilstein, I believe that it does meet the stipulations of the federal bill, and I'm working with the department to make sure that it does, and if there are any questions, we will work with them to make it work within those rules. And to give them the flexibility if the Department of Energy finds otherwise. I will point out that this is another example of leveraging those federal dollars well beyond the life of the stimulus funds. International partnerships represent a great economic opportunity, especially this one, not only in renewable energy but also in the field of bioscience and biobusiness. And so I think the project is very worthy, and I'm hoping that we can work out with the department, with the Office of Energy Security, mutual understanding that it does indeed meet the requirements of the federal bill.
Thank you.
Representative.
That's a follow-up. Yeah. Not a follow-up. Yeah.
I think when we're done with this bill, we'll have to probably lay the others over if we don't get done. That's what my goal is. So Representative Stephan.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I'll look more into that, too. Just getting back to the other section, I would just hope that you would consider taking that language out, because I feel it is very much boxing language, because you're picking winners and losers, and I don't think that that's... I understand putting people to work, that's great, but I don't understand why you have to lay it out, because when you specify some groups, then you're preventing other individuals who may be equally needy and whatnot. So I you don't have to answer, but I'm just saying I would hope you would consider ditching that language, because I think it's unnecessary and frankly harmful.
Representative Cognizance of the pen, Mr. Chair, I'll pass.
Okay, this bill and will be laid over, and I did visit last Friday with Representative Hopkins, and the intent was that we would have the discussion, take any amendments to it, and we're basically, when we lay it over, then the intent is that we're done with this particular bill, with the exception of the motion to incorporate it into Representative Wagenius's bill when Thursday was before us, and that's part of the alignment with the Senate. So the bill is laid over. Thank you. We'll now take the House File 680, which we've just been talking about. Representative Hilty moves the Energy Policy and Finance Management Report for House File 680 to 5th Committee in Grossman. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried. Representative Hilty moves that House File 680 to 5th Committee in Grossman be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. We have an amendment again, being that this is the same bill, the amendment that we adopted by Representative Champion. Representative Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Again, if you look at page 2, it'll be 2.10. I would like for us to strike the word outreach, and on line 2.11, to strike the word subdivision and the number 4. As I indicated earlier, Representative Kalin can confirm our discussions earlier, is that we will look to make sure that we don't need to incorporate 16C.08, because under the statute, when there are some federal funds, that usually that's the other statute that's cited, but we understand that federal law, there's a regulation that also says that there are federal mandates that I believe will already be in place, and it's my understanding from his commitment is that we will move this amendment, and if we need to amend it in the future, that he would make that a friendly amendment as well. Representative Taylor?
What's the amendment? Well, the amendment is before us. Any discussion? Seeing none, and all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Carried. We now have amendment A14. That's the essentially the amendment that we adopted really as well, Representative Kalin. Representative Silkey, would you move the amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair, move the A14 amendment.
Okay, any discussion on the A14 amendment?
Mr. Chair, if we could also incorporate the changes made to the...
We don't need...
Yeah. Sorry for that, Mr. Chair.
Been
vetted. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Any discussion then on the bill?
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, just a question of you. If this bill does indeed move forward and it goes to the House floor, if there was an attempt to circumvent the other committees, especially Ways and Means, would it be your intention or Representative Solberg to immediately recall the bill back to the committees?
The motion is to refer it to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this bill 680 is totally incorporated in the previous bill that we just heard.
Correct.
If 680 were to move forward to the House floor, it would appear to me that all of 1754 would then be germane to 680. Would it be the intention of yourself or Representative Solberg, because 1754 resides in your committee, Mr. Chair, and would be referred to Ways and Means. Would it be your intention to pull it back to committee if there was a successful motion on the House floor to incorporate all of the energy policy?
The 1754, if I understand your question, is going to be moved out of this committee and to Ways and Means. When we have Representative Wagenius's bill before it. So that will, 1754 will be an amendment, or the language in it will be an amendment, and 1754 actually will be remaining in this committee because it will be moved as an amendment on to the Wagenius bill. So 1754 will reside here at that point. Representative
Chunky. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I'm looking at Section 2, Renewable Electric Generation, and the last part of that includes a section for biomass, which I carried a bill over to Representative Hilty's committee. It says biomass, which includes without limitation. He lists some things. If it's not listed, is it included? I know our bill included biomass gasification from prairie plants and other things, for example, at an ethanol facility to green it up. It included waste wood up north from the forest floor and other things, but you didn't list those like I did in the bill. Is there a reason that they're not listed, or are you including biomass includes everything I just said plus this? I just want your intent on that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, my intent is the without limitation is to include those sections. We took, with very small changes requested by the department for the programmatic grant versus rebate, this is Representative Eakin's bill. As you know, your committee funded the cellulosic bioenergy studies in my area, Representative Eakin's, Representative Dills. Representative Beards as well. I think that's actually a project going now where we know that biomass from wood waste, prairie grass, et cetera, is a very viable commercial opportunity, and my intent is that they would be eligible. If we need to do more specific language, I'd be happy to continue the discussion.
And Mr. Chair, I know they are eligible, and that's why I want to make sure that when we're giving instruction to Department of Commerce on those Office of Energy monies, that they realize those projects are eligible if people apply for them.
Yes, sir.
Okay, any further discussion on the bill? Representative Heckberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Galen, I am still very, very concerned about the issue that Representative Pepin brought up about this research. Let's see, in Section 3 at the end of the bill for the Mankato State University. And I'm not positive that you're correct on whether this is going to be allowed. And I don't believe it is. I truly don't believe it's going to be allowed. And I'd make an amendment to take it out right here and now, but I can tell it's a vote that we're going to have, so I'm not going to bother with that. We're under some time restraint also. But I really would hope that you would take that out of the bill because it might jeopardize some of this money that we're going to be getting. You have an extremely tightly written bill here, and I think just the fact that you wrote it so tight that we might be putting some of this money in jeopardy. I think some of those guidelines are constantly changing at the federal level. I think that we need to loosen it up a little bit so that we can spend some of this money and use some of this money. So I'm very, very concerned about the Hilty's bill and your bill jeopardizing some of the funds coming from the federal government. The way you've got the bill written so tight, and especially with that research money, and I'm sure that's not going to be allowed under the current guidelines.
Mr. Chair, brief comment to that, Representative Hackbarth. I also, as I expressed before, am not absolutely positive that it meets the guidelines, and have committed to the department, and I make this commitment to you, that we will work out the language as needed so when the bill goes to the governor's desk, that the constraints meet, that this bill meets the constraints of the federal dollars. I will also point out, Representative Heckbarth, that the bill is, as you said, tightly written because we have not only an opportunity to invest our upwards of $200 million of energy funds wisely and leverage to close to half a billion if we do this right, certainly another $100 million. But if we do this properly and have clear guidance, other states will likely not meet the timeline for reporting and for programmatic activities, and I think we have a great chance to get a second hit at some of the federal funds to do even more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I am just going to express a concern that as we look towards a rhetoric of having transparent and open and understandable government, that we move major pieces of legislation like that to two different tracks. I believe it does. I know it's happened in the past. I know it's bipartisan shenanigans when we were in control as well as now. But I am very concerned that this piece of legislation is moving on two tracks. I think for clean and for understandable legislation, for transparent legislation, I believe it should be in one bill or another, and not forcing our citizens to try and watch multiple balls and multiple plates up in the air.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, then the motion is to remove the House File 680, the Fifth Committee, and Gross as amended, the recommended staff, and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Carried. We have now the bill by Representative Erdahl, and then the last bill on the agenda was a layover for future meetings. But I appreciate the committee's patience, and I guess Representative Erdahl, you've been here for a while, so I appreciate your patience as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Always enjoy the stimulating discussion.
We need a couple of motions, however. Representative Clark?
Yeah, I move the Higher Education Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division report for House File 908, the first engrossment.
Okay, motion is before us. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Clark.
And then I move House File 908, the person goes to be recommended to pass and place on the agenda register.
Okay, motion is before us. And Representative Rudolph, if you could explain the bill and briefly, would be helpful.
Sure, I'll do it very quickly. This is the fifth committee stop on this bill. We've got a pretty good vetting on it. The shared workers program allows workers to share hours or days with other workers, thus allowing an employer who might otherwise be forced to lay off workers to keep more employed at fewer hours. The program is through deed for 1 year. The problem with it and why we need some legislation is that a six-month hiatus from the program is mandatory once the year is completed. In prosperous economic times, this works. In a recession, it leads to layoffs. House File 908 will drop the six-month hiatus provision, keeping workers employed and with benefits. This is from the 1994 federal model language. The companion bill is passed in the Senate, and it's a very good bill for employers and employees as well. 2,000 companies in Minnesota are currently engaged in this, and the problem is they're having to lay off workers because of this six-month hiatus. I had through three committees, the CEO of Dura Supreme testified. I talked to other companies that undergo this program, and they say it's really one of the best things that they have going right now.
Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Hilty, is that last bill controversial at all? Would there be any questions? It's the one I said we would lay over, but if it goes as quickly as this one, we can take it up. And
Mr. Chair, it just asked for a study. I think if what would be controversial is if people think that would result in the implementation of any standards, but presumably is a full-blown study in the Legislative Energy Commission would not necessarily lead to that conclusion, and I don't know that we want to have issues such as appliance standards out there without studying them, so I, from my point of view, it is not at all.
Let's test the water then, and we'll take the...
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, with your previous announcement and knowing that Representative Rudolph's bill would be the last bill, I notice a number of my colleagues have left, and I do not know if they would consider this.
Make a good point. It is necessary that we pass it today so we can add it to the agenda next time. With that, thank you, and meeting adjourned.